Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 12 of the Modern Masculinity Project. Thanks for downloading and supporting. My name is Brad Pankey. I am the host of this podcast. In each episode, I sit down with other men for open and vulnerable conversations on whatever topics come up. The podcast is my attempt to normalize the idea of men talking vulnerably with other men and perhaps to learn the contributing factors that shape us into the people that we are today. Selfishly, I just feel good opening up and hearing others share their struggles and insecurities in similar ways that I have, so we're all kind of not alone here. As always, I hope that we can all learn from these conversations and help make communication a little smoother between everyone. A big thanks also to all those who have subscribed and rated to the podcast on iTunes and wherever else you get this podcast. I'm supremely grateful for your support. If you haven't, please rate, review, and subscribe. That would help me out quite a bit. And ladies, as always, you can submit questions for What Women Wonder via email, mmprojectpod@gmail.com, or you can tweet at me at mmprojectpod is the handle. Okay, I have a very special episode to share this week. My guest this week is a man whom I've experienced every moment of bliss with, all the good times. He's always been there. He's also always been there for all of my failures and dark moments. Just right beside me, always there. With this guy, I literally would not be here today. My guest this week is Brad Pankey, me. This is my first attempt at a solo podcast. I wanted to try this out just kind of as a challenge to myself to kind of practice organizing my thoughts and verbalizing those and kind of getting those feelings out and see if I could make them coherent, which is something sometimes I struggle with. So I thought this might be a good way to practice doing so and letting you all hear me struggle through it. So maybe this will work, maybe it won't, but I think it'll be a pretty cool way for me to learn a new skill, to develop that skill of being able to take what I'm feeling and putting it into words that make sense, right? Isn't that what we're here to do? And it's kind of just me being vulnerable about a few things. So I hope you all enjoy. All right. I've already talked enough. I've got a lot more talking to do, so let's get into it. Here is episode number 12 of the Modern Masculinity Project, Lego My Ego with myself.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me.
I just realized that I gave myself an intro to an episode where I'm about to talk about my ego, identity, and letting go of my ego. I mean, okay, good job, Brad. But it's good to be back after a break, after a week off. You know, I didn't want to take that week off, and I kind of felt like I was letting people down by not having an episode up and ready to go. But my other work was calling, and I just didn't have much to share last week. And that's part of my ego wanting to hang on to being consistent. But it's okay. I think it was okay to take a break, and I'm here now. So where was I last week? Well, I was away in the mountains working at a series, this trail race series that my company sponsors, and I just had an amazing time. And my time out there with people had me thinking a lot about my ego and about my identity and about how that has shifted over time and what moments kind of helped me see my ego and identity in a different way. I get out there into these events and it's strange because I feel like it's a community that just sees me differently from the community in which I live. For whatever reason, maybe that's me showing them a different side, or maybe it's them just seeing something else. Maybe the mountains bring out a different side of me, but I feel like when I'm there, they see me. That's peak me, peak Brad. And so it just brings up this different feeling. Am I showing a different identity? What is this feeling? It just feels more real. When I get out there also in the mountains, just taking away all the people and the work and everything, I get this sense of wonder that makes me question to what I should be connecting to. It's a very primal feeling out there, you know. The mountains in Utah too, you're very high up elevation and they're just stunning. They're stunning to look at and be in within, and it's humbling. They make you feel small. They make you feel unimportant. They make that ego feel unimportant. And so I just love having that sense of wonder that it gives me. And it helps me kind of refocus on what's important, or helps me take away my over focus on things that aren't important. So being in the mountains really brings out a different feeling that I love and connect with, but always makes me think a little bit like, what am I doing? What am I doing in my everyday, where I'm not getting this feeling? And, you know, and I get out there and we're at kind of this crazy mountain race that has huge vertical gains over short, you know, distances, for a foot race. And it's humbling to be around people who are so driven, to overcome this race, some of them not runners and some of them doing their first race ever. And it's humbling. And the skill of others to go over these races so fast, they're so fast. And it humbles me as a runner. It humbles me as just a human being that, you know, I'm not sure I have that drive and I don't have that kind of skill that some people do. And, you know, it just helps me feel one with everybody. It helps me feel like we're all in this kind of this crazy adventure race together. And it really helps me connect to people. The other thing that when I was away in the mountains that I was thinking was that it was humbling to see my own limits. I was humbled by my own limits, you know, whether it be me coming from elevation in Portland, Oregon, going to this, or coming from zero elevation in Portland, Oregon, going up to peaking at 11,000 feet. That humbled me, that, you know, I was so limited in my capacity to take in oxygen. You know, I'm not accustomed to that sort of thing. And it really limited me as a runner and limited to my physical output. So, it was humbling in that sense. And it just made me realize and respect my limits as a human. And it made me feel more human. And with all that said, it had me thinking, like I said, about my ego and identity. And, you know, some of you might not know what I'm talking about. So I want to define those things a little bit first. When I talk about ego and identity, what do I mean? And I can only describe this how I see them. I'm sure there are other interpretations out there and mine could be completely wrong, but this is kind of how I frame it. So it works for me. It might not work for you, which is fine, but here's how I kind of see it. What I'm talking about here is the concept that I have developed about myself over time. It's what I make up in my mind. I guess this is what I have learned about from the Buddhist view of ego, but it's one that resonates with me the most. I see it as my sense of self, right? It can often be the answer to the question, who are you, or who am I, right? It's the story of me. It's my myth, the myth of Brad that I keep telling myself and showing others. And this is my ego. Perhaps the most important part of the ego, as I see it, is that it's the basis for my feeling of self-importance, right? My ego is my self-importance. It's how important I feel. So we'll get to that. But what does this look like and how does it manifest? Well, my ego, how I see it, is essentially it sprouts the identities that I take on and show to the physical world, as I said. These identities can include aspects of which I have no control over, you know, like where I grew up or color of my skin, and or that others have placed on me or that I place on myself, you know. So, for example, I could say that I am an Oregonian. I'm a teacher. I'm an uncle. I am self-sufficient. You know, these are identities that I take on over time, and they either become hardened or I let them go because they don't feel right for me. But I indeed have collected these and hardened them to help me kind of connect to my self-importance and show that to the world. Maybe think of it this way, if I'm not being clear, which might be the case, is that the ego is like a wardrobe that you put on, the I. So you have the ego and the I. The I is like this naked self. You know, your true self is the I. The ego is the wardrobe that you wear. So that means your truest self is just a naked body. Okay. The I, again, is your true self. The ego is your wardrobe, and your identities are your favorite, most coveted outfits. You know, the ones you like to show off. We all have those. Or perhaps think of it as your favorite t-shirt. Maybe it's just one item. These are the outfits that make you feel your peak self. You know, these outfits might be connected to beautiful moments you've had in your life or even sad moments. They may be nostalgic in some way, but they hold importance to you. You know, you feel like they help you feel at your best somehow, or they connect to you in a way that you don't want to let go. You know, so they're connected to that sense of self. And for me, what these identity outfits in my ego wardrobe are not, they're not my I, they're not my truth. So we have the naked truth, right, of that I, and the ego wardrobe of self-descriptions that we layer on top of our naked truth. So that was probably a little confusing, but that's okay. Just kind of work through it a little bit with me here. We have two things, the ego and the naked eye. So now we arrive at a question of why is this a problem, right? For me, the problem became in thinking that these wardrobes are who I am, right? I related them to my naked truth. The problem for me is clinging to these identities even as I grow and move past them. You know, let's go back to the wardrobe example. Over time, I've acquired my favorite outfits. I pick these up at certain times for specific reasons, meaning a certain outfit is relevant to a moment in time. How am I feeling 10 years ago? You know, that's the outfit I was wearing then, and it felt so good that I cling to it. I love these outfits. They're comfortable. They make me feel good, and they're familiar. I know what goes together, and I don't have to think about these outfits, you know. And so I collect them and hang them up amongst the other outfits. You know, I'm just imagining this closet. Everyone look in their closet, right? We all have just clothes that pile up that we don't wear, but we can't just let them go. You know, that was the t-shirt from my 12th grade, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, so we pile these up, and in my ego closet, if you will, is just full of these outfits. That can feel good, right? You know, it's almost like for a while I've looked into that closet and go, wow, look at all these outfits. You know, I've got something for everything. You know, I can put that on and feel good about X, Y, and Z and, you know, whatever. But really, I was just clinging to these identities. And that's where problems arise, you know. I bought many of these outfits. I acquired these identities a long time ago. And the person that felt good in those outfits, wearing those identities, is no longer the person who I am now. And though I recognize that these outfits are no longer representing the I. They're no longer, you know, touching my true self. I cling to them, gripping them tightly with a fist of familiarity and comfort, and I can't let them go. I can't let go of the person that I was. You know, there's so much of me, the I, attached to those outfits when they're actually separate things. That naked eye and that ego outfit, those are separate. And yet, as I've acquired these identities and become more and more attached to them, the mistake was is attaching the eye to it as well. And so letting it go would feel painful. It would feel like I'm just losing myself in general, which isn't the truth. You know, the even thinking about it, it's like, what would I be without these outfits? You know? So as the representative of the eye, so as they represent the eye, the more and more I relate them to the eye, the more I suffer. If I would merely let them go, smiling with gratitude for what they've done for me, I could be free of this suffering. But that's a lot easier said than done, right? So that's, you know, the first step in easing this suffering is kind of part of this practice right now, is figuring out which outfits I no longer need to carry, or which of these outfits that I bought in the past that are causing me suffering in the now. So that is what I did here. So I hope you kind of understand what I'm saying there with ego and identity and the I, the mythical I, the conscious I. Going to share with you four identities that I have taken on over time that feed my ego monster. And I'll share some issues those have caused me. And I'll acknowledging that there's far more than four that I've taken on. And I have far more than four problems. Or so if it seems short, or if it's like, dude, you've got all sorts of problems. Yeah, I'm well aware of those. But for the sake of brevity and for this podcast, I'm just going to go over four that I've identified a little more clearly. So, you know, that's when I'm in the mountains and thinking about my identity and ego, these things are coming up and I'm trying to synthesize them and like really relate them to problems that I have now and how I've shed these over time. Because some of these are kind of gone, some of them aren't, some of them I'm still working on. So the first one that came up is this identity of being independent and self-sufficient, right? This goes back for as long as I can remember. I've always been praised for being self-sufficient, independent. I was a pretty, I could usually take care of myself, could be left alone, could do things on my own. I was really good in school. I didn't need a lot of help with my homework. I would ask for it at times, but I was more praised for just doing my thing and being easy. Wasn't getting into trouble and, you know, and moved through in college, paying my bills, doing all that. Like, I was pretty self-sufficient and independent. And I was praised for that, which is great. It felt good. But it felt so good that it's like I took that on as me. You know, I am independent. I am self-sufficient. This became something that I started to live and started to become something that made me feel more self-important. So that means it started to feed that ego. So it's an identity that I didn't want to let go. And what does that mean? Well, how does that manifest? Why is that a problem? Well, now, you know, later in life, I felt guilty always for asking for help. If I needed help on a project at work, or if I needed help with homework, if I needed help cleaning the house, if I needed help doing something, I'd probably feel guilty for asking if I even did ask. A lot of the times I would just stay quiet and suffer through something. And that's where the clinging to that identity caused me some suffering, right? I could have just, it's pretty easy to ask for help. We should, as people, feel comfortable doing so. But, you know, when I cling to this identity of being independent and self-sufficient, I want to continue to get that praise. I want to continue to be seen that way because it makes me feel more important. But it's not worth the price of causing me suffering. It's not worth the price of not getting the help that I need, right? So over time, that's been something I've been working on and letting go and feeling comfortable asking for help. And it's been a lot better, you know. It's really eased the suffering, and I still struggle with it here and there, but it's definitely, that identity has definitely crumbled quite a bit. The second one, I had to reverse engineer this one a little bit. So, as I, and this is going to not sound normal, I guess, at first, but it'll make sense. Maybe, you know, I took on this identity, and this is a hard one for me to admit, but took on this identity of just being sad and down and in pain all the time, emotional pain. And where did that come from before what it did to me, what it's done to me is came from kind of just being, feeling alone or lonely since for a long time, you know, way back probably in early high school, let's say freshman, and just kind of that feeling of being on my own. You know, I just talked about being self-sufficient, independent, but that also means I was just alone. I just felt alone. And I'm not sure if I felt like I was getting enough love and attention. And so in my mind, the easiest way to get love and attention was to take on this identity of feeling sad, to feeling like I was always down. And then, you know, people tend to share love and affection with you when you're feeling like that, right? So, you know, somebody could walk up and say, "Hey, how's your day going?" And I go, "Yeah, it's kind of a shitty day. I'm not having the best day." And, "Oh, why not? Tell me more. You know, what's wrong?" You know, I'd get that a lot, and it would help me feel important. It would help me feel loved. And, but that's also really annoying to other people, I'm sure. And maybe it's a balance of, it was me crying out a little bit and some people not hearing me or exploring that feeling a little bit more other than just saying, "Talk to me about it," because I was kind of getting what I wanted. It made me feel more important. It probably pushed some people away. But it's an identity that I took on that, and I got what I wanted out of it. So I kept wearing it. And have done it over time, and it's crumbled away, and it's still there a little bit. But that's one I'm not too proud of. But at least I can see it now. I guess, you know, you got to explore these things. The next one I explored is my identity as a runner. This has come up recently, and I don't really know why I've wanted to get rid of it, or I wanted to get rid of it for a long time. You know, I've gone into the thought that maybe gripping it, holding on to it, it made me feel like I was connected to my dad. Maybe I liked people seeing me as an athlete, you know, as being good, like semi-good at something. Athletic, you know, because I was never good at other sports of any kind. I was a pretty shitty basketball player and wasn't even really that fast of a runner, but it was my thing. I was excited about running, so, you know, people saw me as the runner athlete, as being good at something. But I think my resistance to this identity eventually, an insistence on not being seen as a runner, was mostly because I didn't want people to view me as one thing, right? I wanted people just to see me as more than a runner. I fit the physical stereotype of a runner. If you've never met me, you know, this, you know, just skinny, wiry dude, but, which people would point out often, and that would kind of bother me. You know, you're already putting me in a box. But I just felt like everyone had an image built in their head of what a runner was, and that it was placed on me without considering who I am. And that doesn't feel good. You know, why can't you see me? That's what I would just think. I'm more than my physical self. And lastly, I felt like claiming to be this one thing separated me from others, and that people thought I was holding this as a "I am better than you" badge or something like that, like, which was not the case. And I was also just overly competitive, and being too serious about being a runner made me feel, and just didn't make me feel good inside. So now I want to acknowledge something, that my thinking on this is deeply flawed, because I really should not care what others think. I can self-identify as whatever I want, because I know what it means to me. I know what it means to be a runner to me. With that said, I had to let it go a little bit, because holding on to it so tightly, it was causing me some suffering. And so I shifted from "I am a runner" to "yes, I run." Same thing, maybe, but the stories I tell myself do matter. You know, being a runner carries this connotation. Just being someone who runs in my mind is a little different. And so my identity as a runner has changed tremendously over the last 13 years, let's say, 31 now. So since I was 18, it's just changed tremendously. And how I view running has changed. But it has caused me some problems when I was just gripping on to being a runner. I was gripping on to this feeling that it mattered how people saw me, which, you know, doesn't seem too obvious of a connection, but for me it was. And so the fourth one that kind of came up when I was thinking about this, is taking on the identity of being a good student. You know, this caused me just to be overly focused on school and getting good grades. I would cling to this. No matter what, nothing would stop me from getting good grades. And for those of you who didn't give two shits about getting good grades in school, you may be thinking, what in the hell are you talking about? Like, why did it matter? The answer is it didn't matter. But I guess I just liked, it fed my ego monster to be seen as a good student. Holy shit, that's impressive. You got straight A's. Like, and again, like talking about feeding my ego and stuff, it's not easy, but, and it's kind of, you know, you look back at it, it's kind of silly, but it was there. It was real. This identity that I took on of good student made me feel good in the moment. But it also caused me a lot of suffering. And I'm not even sure that I have the comfort or strength right now to go over the number of ways that this one thing has caused me, the numerous injury issues this has caused me. Perhaps I've missed out on parts of life that I wish I would have experienced. Maybe I pushed people away. Maybe I ignored things that I shouldn't have ignored. Maybe I used it as a crutch at times when I was afraid to do something. Oh, sorry, I can't. Focused on school. Maybe I overlooked important other issues in life that I should have been focusing on. School just didn't, you know, looking back, it just doesn't matter. I mean, it was cool. I love to learn. I think it's important to go to school if you want to, but the grades are not an indication of anything. And I got too focused on those, and I started owning this identity. Really would get offended and really would feel like shit if I got anything less than an A. Felt like less of a person. didn't handle that very well, I suppose. And so shedding that identity as good student has felt, well, it's irrelevant to me now because I'm not a student, but examining it from, you know, this point of view is, from the person I am today, examining it from now has been a lot helpful because I can see that the same idea behind being a good student, I can see it manifesting in other areas of my life, and it's good to be able to identify it. And so, you know, I just described kind of four identities that stem from feeding my ego. And it's like, I've worked pretty hard on dissolving these and crumbling them and kind of beating them down a little bit and keeping my ego in check. And so the question is, how did I do that? What did I do? Because there's nothing that we hold closer to our heart than our identity, right? So what are the first steps that I took, or what have I done in the last 10 to 13 years to kind of start to chip away at these identities and keep my ego in check? Well, this is going to sound pretty obvious, but read and listen, podcasts, books, blogs, whatever. I had to eventually find something to consume on the subject. It could have been about Buddhism. It could have been just about mindfulness. It could have been about a biography about somebody else that resonated with me, and that I could keep my attention. So podcasts have been life-changing to me. I've read so many different books that have changed my perspective on life. And I had to do something outside of myself. I had to consume something outside of myself that would help me shift my perspective, right? Even if I didn't take it past that, I just needed to see that there was something else out there. Podcast, books, whatever you want to, books on tape, blogs, I don't know, whatever you want to consume that resonates. It was critical. Okay. The next thing, just question myself. Who am I? What am I? Or what is the observer of these thoughts? You know, I'm talking about the consciousness there. If I lost my memory, who would I be? What would I be? Would I still be Brad? Who's Brad? What if my body failed? Would I still be me? Who would I be at that point? In exploring these questions, I found that I was allowing myself to kind of also step into some pretty dark places of, you know, like you're questioning your values, you know, such as, if you're losing your body, you're losing my identity as a runner. And what does that mean? If you're losing your memory, it's like, holy shit. Now what are you? Are you a different person? You're no longer yourself. What are you? What's important to you, Brad? I'm talking to myself here when I'm doing these things. And is that really important? Why is that not important? Why are you holding on to that so tightly? What are you afraid of? And a lot of it, you know, when you kind of start, the questions come up, it comes down to fear. There's a lot that I was afraid of. And that's where the dark moments come, when you're stepping and facing your fear. So the next thing beyond those questions, you know, you can ask those questions, but then you have to practice. I had to practice all this. So this means setting aside time to actually think about these questions, to explore the answers, and to try to apply them to even the simplest parts of my life. You know, I just had to try it out. And I had to verbalize certain things. You know, as an example, I came up with answers to that all common question of, you know, people would ask, how are you? And instead of retreating into that sad identity that I talked about earlier to get attention and love, I created answers where I could acknowledge a few things that I was grateful for in life and say, you know, I'm grateful for the sunshine in the day, so, you know, I'm pretty good. It just took practice. And just over time, these become part of you and they help dissolve the thing that you're practicing against. And, you know, speaking of gratitude, another practice that I had was, I wrote a gratitude log every day. Just something I was grateful for to start the day. Posted it on Facebook. I did that for like something 4 straight years without missing a day. Okay, so practice, repetition. Just like anything, to get good, you need to do it over and over and over and over. Get your 10,000 hours in, right? So, and that was the next step, is repeat. The final thing I did was I just kept repeating everything I just mentioned. Daily, on a daily basis. If that sounds annoying, it's because it was. It is annoying. You know, to be introspective and to really go to places you don't want to go. Over and over and over and over and over. It's hard. It's hard work. It was and it remains today a hard work. So I can't just escape it. It needs to be repeated. Right? And so, but with that said, you know, some of the other things I did along the way, counseling. You know, I just mentioned all those things, but I've been going to counseling for the better part of the last 10 years on and off. And I can't recommend that enough to people, to everyone. You know, this is to do all those things I just mentioned, read, question, practice, repeat, without counseling kind of as serving as the support. I don't know if I'd have been very successful. It's important I was doing it at the same time because it helps me synthesize my thoughts and feelings into something I can actually use. And I'm so grateful for my counselor now and in that practice. And then it's how it's helped me tear down some of these identities and kind of soften my ego and help me discover the I, the naked truth. So that's another one I've done. The other one I've tried to do, which... hasn't ended up being very healthy, maybe, or haven't done it right, is just escaping my ego through travel. I can be a different Brad when I'm traveling. You know, I can explore what I don't know. I can meet new people. They can see me for who I am right away, or maybe they don't. Maybe they make assumptions based on my tattoos or my hair or whatever, but it's an escape from my normal ego or these normal identities. I can put them down for a while and rest. I don't know if I'd recommend that one, but it was something that I tried and I did learn a lot. I recommend travel big time, but can't say that I would recommend it as a solution. So this last one I want to talk about is not something that I did, but something that happened. And that was the death of my father. If you kind of think of everything else as I just describing as kind of chipping away at this dam, or, you know, cracking the dam. Well, this is when the dam burst open. This is when the damn thing just exploded. And when this happened, from diagnosis of his brain cancer to the moment he died, that moment he died, I guess my reality really crumbled before me. It was done. And it was kind of interesting for me to think about this a little bit right now, because it's always hard to explain to people what that did to me. But I realized that I lost my identity as a son altogether, gone. You know, given that my mom was never really around, I was, in that moment, that means I had no mom and I had no father, so I was done being a son in any respect, right? I was also no longer Spank, which is what my dad, Spank, short for Spanky, which is what he called me with affection. I no longer had that affectionate connection, that kind of that persona. I was no longer also the person he turned to for certain kinds of advice. You know, I read this email that he sent me on one of the episodes of the podcast where he kind of called me his spirit guide. So that was gone. These are things that I was clinging to very hard. You know, our relationship, I was clinging to it hard. So when I describe, you know, to people what it's like losing my dad and why it's been so hard to put into words, this is why. But that gets pretty close, I think. Stripping away identities that you think you never even think about losing, or you never think you will lose at the time, at a very young age. And, you know, and it wasn't even that I wasn't going to be able to hug him again that made me so sad, or, but it was just, but it also that it's just the experience that it stripped me of who I was. That was mainly it. But it really, at the end of the day, it's as hard as it is to say it, it helped me a lot, because it just shattered so many identities that I was clinging to that would inevitably end at some point. So that's kind of what happened and what I did. And, you know, now you arrive at, well, what's left? You know, the dam's busted open. Everything's laying before my feet. Well, what's left? One thing that happened that I didn't expect was like a period of mourning. Yes, mourning. Like I was stripped away of all these identities. It became a bit sad in a way. The person that I viewed myself as was a person that I loved, right? I held him somewhat in love all the time and with kindness. And to let that person go, and the person that I continue to practice letting go, makes me feel a bit sad. So I've had to take some time to mourn the loss of these identities. Maybe some of it is that I spent a lot of the time and energy in building these identities and that I thought they would be permanent. But as I said, the truth is nothing is permanent. You know, I just talked about that identity as a son that I had with my dad, and that eventually was going to end. That it ended so early was a lot different, but nothing is permanent. You know, I hold the idea that time is a construct, right? So there's nothing even that says that I should have not lost my dad at that time. There is no should have with time. There's nothing that says I should discover my true self by any age, for example. Hell, there's nothing that says I should even discover myself in this lifetime. And so I take a moment to mourn in gratitude for what these identities brought me. Moving past mourning into a space where I have seemingly stripped away these identities, I get excited though. Right? So I mourn these identities. It's like, man, I spent a lot of energy on those. They brought me a lot of beautiful moments. They really helped me through some tough times, but I have to let them go. As much time and energy as I spent on them, as much kind of scary it is to let them go, I have to. And so you move past them and it's kind of exciting. And now you're like, mission accomplished, right? However, once I stop mourning, it's where I discover something else that's very important. You know, I arrive at a place where you think you're going to be in bliss. And it's like, no, dude, you're not enlightened. I'm not living in this magically free and blissful state all of a sudden. In fact, I had a strong feeling of anxiety of once I arrived, once I get past the morning and into this space. I instantly realized that I had no anchor and nowhere to hide. My true self, that naked eye, was revealed for all to see out there just flapping in the breeze. I had grown accustomed to retreating to one of my identities to find comfort. I could always rely on that old comfy outfit, right, to make me feel safe and comfortable. Even though it might not be representative of who I truly am, it was always kind of like this safe thing. You know, what I'm describing here is an enhanced sense of awareness, which is the next thing that's left. You know, in this awareness, this new awareness creates a whole new set of problems for me. You know, you can see why this kind of just keeps going and going and going, and it takes practice and work, and maybe I don't achieve it in this lifetime, maybe I do, but this new sense of awareness, I get excited of seeing, the excitement of seeing, of being aware, can be overwhelming. It can create tension when I'm in a space where there are others who are still clinging to identities and these constructs. And I want to just pause to say that I don't look down on people for living that way. Not everyone needs to do what I'm talking about. and you might find all this to be bullshit, which is totally cool. I'm cool with that. But, you know, I'm cool with people who want to live however they want to live without harming other people, of course. But so I'm not trying to say that if you're still living in these constructs or clinging to identities that you're less of a person or anything, or that you need to change. You do you. If you're happy, I'm happy. Cool. So just kind of back to this awareness. I'm in these spaces with others, aware and excited to see things so clearly, right? I feel like I'm bouncing around with joy sometimes, like just yelling, come play with me, come play with me. But people don't want to come play. They resist and continue to embrace living under that kind of bell curve of normal, which, again, I'm cool with, but I get excited and hope that others will see life as I do. And when they don't, I feel rejected. You know, this has happened a little bit on and off over the last few years, and it's made me realize that I've made a critical error on my way to arriving here. You know, I've had moments where I felt frustrated that people won't come over and play with me, or that they are taking life too seriously, or which wasn't right of me to be frustrated with them. Because feeling of frustration kicks up when I can't get people to see me or value that I am trying to live without an identity, that I'm trying to be free, like at the most essential level free. Live in a free country, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that naked eye, to letting that person come out and play and revealing myself. And the error in shedding the identities I talked about here is that I replace them with another identity. So I shed those, I feel identityless, and now I've taken on an identity of being identityless. Does that make sense? I don't, you can't answer me, but my new identity is having no identity, and I cling to it. And so I get frustrated when others can't see what I'm trying to do or won't come over and play with me. Because, you know, one of the benefits for me, at least, is just having this zest for life that it's helped me, just seeing beauty in life, being the simplest things, being so beautiful and not worrying about things that I can't control. And the problem in clinging to that identityless identity is that I become frustrated. So great. It's like now I unintentionally bought a new outfit, right? It's one that others around me might not understand or might not have ever seen before. So it's created a whole new set of problems. But, you know, it's kind of at this point where the internal optimist in me kicks in, though. When I feel this resistance from people, the optimist wants to get people to see me, to help people see themselves, because the internal optimist feels everyone would be better off doing so. And that's the clinging to that non-identity identity I was talking about. And it causes me to suffer. I shouldn't expect others to think like me or expect their actions or motivations to match mine. They haven't lived the same life I've lived, experienced the same experiences as I have. They're walking their own path, and the only thing I should be doing is loving them for who they are now. And I know they're struggling with something, we all do. You know, they might be struggling to communicate their frustrations with me about me, but nonetheless, they deserve to be loved just as much as I do. And so here I am with a lot more work to do. but, you know, I can smile a lot more now than at any other point in my life as I kind of shed these identities and crumble them down and reveal my true self and get connected with what I'm really connected to. And I find myself living more free moments than at any other time. I find that playful space a lot more in life, kind of laughing at the cosmic joke. With all that said, I thought about what the greatest gift of all this work has been for me. And the greatest gift that I've received so far from doing this work, which I have a lot more to do. I'm not perfect. I'm not trying to imply that. And I could only be 20% done with this work, right? But the greatest gift is that I've started to live my truth with more comfort, more and more. And as I do that, I live with less fear about anything, really. I'm finding that it's impossible to be in fear while also being in truth. You know, when you think about times that you're not in truth, when you're dishonest, why are you dishonest? Why am I dishonest? Those are moments that I fear something. I don't know what it is. I fear that if I'm truthful, that something's going to happen to me. Right? I'm afraid of something happening if I'm truthful. So I'm dishonest and I try to avoid it. But living in fear isn't good. We've seen, you know, that can cause societal problems. It can cause internal problems. It can cause just suffering. And so more and more as I live my truth, I find that I can't live in fear. And you might be wondering, like, well, what do you mean? Like, fear of what? And the answer is, I don't fear much. I don't fear death, which is a big one, right, for some people. I don't, much less, and for me, this personally, for much less than any other point in my life, I feel less fear of being lonely. That's always been a big one for me. So the more I ground myself in truth, the more I open up to who I am, and the less fear I live with. And that's kind of been the greatest lesson that I've learned, or the greatest gift I've been given from all this work, you know? And maybe you can arrive there without having all that work. That would be cool. Let me know if you have and what you've done to get there, because maybe we can all learn from you, whoever you are out there. Let me know your tips. You know, if you've thought about some of the stuff I'm talking about here, let me know what you've done, or let me know about some of your identities that you've struggled with, or you're trying to unpack, or that you're trying to let go. I'd love to hear them. I think when we share like this, we can all learn from each other a little bit. You know, because these aren't easy things to do. They're not easy things to start. So just have the courage to try if you want to. Okay, well, that was a bit harder than I thought, but it looks like I just rambled on for almost 50 minutes. So if you're still listening now, thank you so much for making it to the end. That truly means a lot to me that you all stick around with me for these longer episodes, and especially for my first solo podcast. You know, I'm just sitting here in my living room talking into a microphone. I'm making hand gestures. If somebody saw me, they would probably be like, what the hell are you doing? My neighbors might be wondering what I'm doing. But anyways, truly means a lot for me for y'all to engage with this and send your words of encouragement for the other guys that join. I love you all so much. All right? All right, y'all. Until next time, be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts, and had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough. We'll be right back.
Yeah.